start wanting sanctions lifted. That's been their goal for a long time. What changed did have to do with Iran's nuclear program. That's what's played the role in shifting the power.
It was precisely the fact that the Iranians began in 2006 to not only enrich uranium, but to essentially build up a stockpile of low-enriched uranium. And then, in 2010, in order to get the attention of the Obama administration, to get it to agree to negotiations, the Iranians began to enrich uranium to the level of 20%, which was regarded as an alarming sign by the Obama administration. And that was certainly one of the things that prompted Obama to decide that it was time to begin a process of negotiations. But it was also the failure of the pressure on Iran through, the economic sanctions beginning in 2012, but also the failure of cyber attacks in 2009 and 2012, and the exploitation by the Obama administration of the at least implicit threat of an attack on the Iranian nuclear program by the Israelis. So that combination of pressures, which Obama hoped would bring about a shift in Iranian negotiating posture, failed, and therefore Obama is really compelled, I think, to finally go into a real negotiating situation with Iran.
Well, as we now read about working things out at the table rather than on the battlefield, I think it seems worth saying.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6 o'clock. You may listen to the rest of Counterspin on FAIR's website. That's fair.org. Well, next is your favorite, Bread and Roses, news and views from a feminist perspective. So stay tuned.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 14th Annual Northwest String Summit, July 16th through the 19th at Horning's Hideout in North Plains, Oregon. Hosted by Colorado-based Yonder Mountain String Band, this year's festival includes bands such as Grinsky's Bluegrass, the infamous String Dusters, Keller Williams' Grateful Grass, Sook Twins, and more. There will also be a late-night stage, an early-morning Cascadia stage, and daytime movies and seminars. Again, that's the 14th Annual Northwest String Summit, July 16th through the 19th at Horning's Hideout in North Plains, Oregon. More information about the festival can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is a proud sponsor of the 35th Cathedral Park Jazz Festival, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, July 17th, 18th, and 19th. The festival is free and family friendly and runs from 5 to 10 p.m. Friday, noon to 10 p.m. Saturday, 1 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Sunday. The festival is sponsored by the Jazz Society of Oregon, a nonprofit arts organization. This year, we'll have performances from Haley Newsringer, Robert Moore Orchestra, Paul Creighton Project, a tribute to Stevie Wonder, Alan Jones Academy of Music, Kung Pao Chickens, Portland Youth Jazz Orchestra, LaRonda Steele, the Guitar Masters Finale with Lloyd Jones, Norman Sylvester, Michael Osborne, Jay Burkholder, and Ben Rice. This is going to be under the St. John's Bridge on the east side of the Willamette River. We'll be broadcasting live from KBOO 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM, all day Saturday. Tune in.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned, values-driven cooperative striving to provide access to whole foods customers can trust. People's features farm-direct organic produce, bulk foods, a weekly year-round farmers market, and everyone is welcome. Located on Southeast 21st and Tibbetts Street between Division and Powell. More information at peoples.coop. This KBOO program has also been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Aladdin Theater, presenting An Evening with Ricky Lee Jones, Wednesday, July 22nd. Tickets for Ricky Lee Jones, as well as information about downloading her album, are available at aladdin-theater.com.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens me lost grace. All touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, feminist news and public affairs on the KBOO airwaves since 1978, the longest-running feminist program in the country. Connect with Bread and Roses on the KBOO website at kboo.fm/breadandroses. There you can listen to past shows, podcasts. You can also share your feedback, so show ideas. And of course, please like us on Facebook, KBOO Bread and Roses. And also, if you are in the Twitter universe, we are now, thanks to Pamela Santos, on Twitter. We are Bread and Roses Radio on Twitter. Well, also, I wanted to let you know that we are a collective of women-identified radio activists, and we are always looking for new folks to join us. So if you would like to become a producer, host, or engineer with us, no experience necessary, you can contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator. Her name is Ani Haynes, and her email is volunteer@kboo.org. Her phone number is 503-231-8032. Her extension is 213. Well, I'm one of your hosts this week, as well as your engineer, Delphine Crescenzo, and I'm joined by
Adrian Livingston. Yay! Tonight on Bread and Roses. Yay, thank you. We will first learn about the Core Value Index, which helps you discover your innate core values and how you are hardwired in human operating system, which we will learn more about a little bit shortly. Travis Stovall of EREP is here in the studio with us to give us a full understanding of this assessment and to explain how it applies to you personally and professionally. Later in the program, we will be joined by guests from the American Society for the Positive Care of Children. Their mission is to empower a network of individuals and organizations dedicated to the positive physical, emotional, and intellectual development of children and youth in the United States. We will talk with them about what they are doing to advocate and keep our children safe. But first, a little bit from our first guest, Travis Stovall. He is currently the CEO and co-founder of EREP.com, a firm focused on helping individuals find the work they love and companies find the right team members. He's active in the community, and he has been featured in the Oregonian for his dynamic leadership of the Gresham Area Chamber of Commerce as president of the board of directors. In his free time, and he doesn't have much of it, it seems, these days, he is a private pilot and enjoys various sports. Travis, welcome to Bread and Roses.
Thank you, Adrian.
Thank you. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to do the work that you do.
Well, I had the opportunity to work with a lot of companies in doing consulting and noticed that one of the most critical things and components of success are getting the right people in the right seats. And there was a great book written by Jim Collins called Good to Great. And he went through the success factors of companies that rose from good companies to great companies. And he always found the same common denominator, and that was great people. And then I stumbled across a statistic that was given to us by the Gallup company, which does polls all over the world. And that statistic was that 70% of people are unhappy in their current role. That's a staggering figure when you start to think about all the people that work in America, which is about 154 million people, and 70% of the workforce is not engaged in their current role. And when we think about happiness, we think about what are the critical things that lead to that. We think about family, we think about community, we think about satisfaction with contributions to the world around them. And when one of those is off, then that unhappiness can trickle down into the family life and everywhere else.
Yes.
And so as we begin to pull those together, success in companies is having the right people in the right seats, and happiness for people is contributing in ways that they get this opportunity to feel like they're giving something to the world around them. We thought, and I thought, wow, we've got to do something to change this statistic. We've got to do something to allow people to understand how they're hardwired and how to take that hardwiring and apply it in ways that actually brings them back a high level of satisfaction. That's what motivated me to pursue starting EREP and finding ways and mechanisms that allow us to understand how people are hardwired and take that hardwiring and put it to good use for themselves and for the companies they work for.
So you believe a lot of times that people don't find what they really love to do is because they don't really understand who they are as an individual, as far as the hardwiring. And I know we're going to talk a little bit more about that, but knowing what their strengths are and what they excel at, that they accept things that they think, you know, so I want to go into the travel industry. I might accept being, say, a guest service agent because I think that gets me into the travels, you know, industry, but it might not be the right position for me because I really don't understand who I am as an individual that can really go out and tackle, wow, you know. So it's like that where people just don't really understand?
That's correct. It's self-awareness. I mean, okay. Self-awareness is the critical foundation to ensuring that we understand how we're hardwired and mm-hmm. what true contributions we can make. And I have to say that I'm what we call in the core values index assessment a merchant builder. We always reference the primary and secondary core values. And I'm a merchant, a high merchant and a high builder, not much banker and not a lot of innovator. And when you look at traditional folks that work with numbers and data and information, they sit somewhere in that lower cognitive range of innovators and bankers. Mm-hmm. Well, I studied to be an accountant in college. And so there's just this, even myself, there was this ill fit between what I studied and where I educated myself and my true passion and core values and my true motivation. I didn't know what that truly was until I took the CVI Core Values Index about 6 years ago and discovered I am not the detail-oriented person that I thought I was.
So we need to have a lot of college students take this before start out on their journey.
That is correct.
Okay. So tell us more about what is the Core Value Index. And if you referenced in your biography, the human operating system. So exactly what is that? And correct. Then what is a CVI?
Well, the Core Values Index assessment was originally developed by Lynn Taylor out of Seattle, Lynn Ellsworth Taylor. And he set out to develop something that really reached in and grabbed that human operating system and how we're originally hardwired. He calls it the human operating system because it's how we respond to various stimuli. And so as I perceive something in the world around me, I'm going to see that and respond in ways that is directly associated with my core value profile. Mm-hmm. And so the CVI is this incredible tool, psychometric assessment, that says this is how you, Adrian, respond to various things that happen in the world around you, to various inputs that you receive. And it comes somewhat from a subconscious place where we're not even consciously thinking about some of our responses because it's so natural for us to respond in that way. So it's this innate human operating system that's with us from birth, and it lets us respond to various stimuli in ways that actually match the who we are. And again, so Lynn started work on this about 30 years ago, studied all the psychology greats, starting with Maslow and its hierarchy of needs, where you start with, you know, food and water and shelter and go all the way up to the top of the pyramid, which is self-actualization. And he realized you couldn't get to self-actualization unless you pass through self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And the CVI allows us to truly understand who we are. So it gives us, again, it gives us energies and quantities of the four major core values. Those four major core values, I referenced titles for them before, but they are truly love, power, wisdom, and knowledge are the four core values that exist in each of us in various quantities. And the Core Value Index allows us to understand how much of each of those core values exist within us, which gives us a tremendous level of self-awareness and understanding of how we can apply ourselves and contribute to the various world around us, both on a personal, from a personal perspective and a professional perspective.
Nice. So why would someone not take this assessment?
I can't think of any reason.
Other than
not knowing about it. Because, you know, I get the opportunity to talk about the Core Values Index, the CVI, with numerous people. And it's so fun. I was just meeting with a gentleman yesterday who's looked at numerous assessments. Mm-hmm. And as I'm referencing his profile and referencing some of the things that people who have his profile generally do, he looks at me and says, Travis, it's what you're identifying. He's smiling. You could just tell the exuberance that is coming out of him. He's like, wow. He goes, there is no assessment that I think I've ever taken that has drawn out of me what you just referenced just by looking at my profile output. He goes, I've seen and I've taken a lot of assessments. And so it's incredibly fun for me and my, you know, the folks I work with to see this realization that comes from when people experience this new form of self-awareness, and they become more confident, and they become ready to, again, they become ready to apply this new information, this energy now to the world around them in new ways. So it's, you know, I don't know if you can tell in my voice, but I'm just, I have a lot of fun doing what I'm doing.
So you're working what you love.
I'm doing what I love. I'm part of the 30% that's fully engaged, I think overly engaged in what I do.
I love it. So as you talk about that, let's talk about the accuracy of the assessments, because obviously there's the Myers-Briggs. There are others out there. What Correct. Is the accuracy of this, and how does it compare to the others?
So we've done a lot of work, multiple longitudinal studies. So we go in and we take a group of people that have taken the assessment multiple times over an 11-year period. And we take that and we take their output and their data. And then last time we did this, we utilized Seattle Research Partners, and they reviewed all this data. 97.7% of the result comes back the same. So this group of folks took it multiple times. What it's doing is it gives us two things. It lets us know that the human operating system doesn't change. We are who we are. Now, we mature within our core values. So, I use my merchant a little bit less. I use my builder a little bit more. I use my innovator a little bit more. I don't use my banker at all.
Yeah, you once told me you didn't think.
Yeah, I don't. It doesn't exist in me. And so we have that opportunity to use all these different core values in ways that we get to contribute to the world around us. So where was I at?
As far as the assessment
and the accuracy. And so that's the merchant for you. So as far as the accuracy, 97.7% of the time when they've taken it multiple times, we call it a repeat reliability score, it's come back the same. So it's telling us that we don't change. It also lets us know that we have a highly accurate assessment, because even if we didn't change, the assessment would change if your accuracy was off. So assessments are generally considered accurate at 70%. So you had a lot of the assessments out on the market that are somewhere around 70 to between 80% accurate in a repeat reliability scoring. And the core values index, the CVI, actually comes in at 97.7%. It's extremely accurate. And I've worked with a lot of folks who have taken it and seen their expression when I'm describing who they are, and I've just met them, and they say, wow, I cannot believe how much you know about me, and you just met me. I says, it's all in your core values index profile.
Yes. Well, if you are just tuning in, you are listening to KBOO Portland. We are talking tonight with Travis Stovall of eRep.com. So another thing that you point out is that you help companies hire the best fit. How do you do that?
So we take the same assessment tool that we utilize to help people understand how they're hardwired, the core values index assessment. And then we go and we work with the company to identify what we call the top performer profile. And the top performer profile takes the same assessment, and it gives us an output that is actually the same output that you see on your profile, but it gives us to us for that specific position. So if you're a innovator, banker, merchant, builder, and the role requires an innovator, banker, merchant, builder, then it will find those two and match them up. It's kind of like eHarmony meets LinkedIn. It's this it's this incredible matchmaker system that just begins to solve the challenge of 70% of people are unhappy in their current role. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the number gets even worse when we talk about the number doesn't get worse, but 22% of people, this is the same Gallup study, 22% of people are not engaged or disengaged to a degree they're negative on the company's performance. So that's the really ill fit. And so with the core values index assessment and top performer profiles, we have an opportunity to bring those people together, kind of like the eHarmony concept into a relationship that actually works and functions as it should. And we're really passionate. I mean, we're really passionate about helping people achieve, you know, their highest form of contribution. And along the same lines, in a book that was written by the CEO and chairman of Gallup, Jim Clifton, the Coming Jobs War. He said that they did a recent research project, and they found in his book, he says, this is the most significant finding in the history of Gallup. As I'm reading this paragraph, I thought, what's coming? He goes, this is absolutely the most significant finding ever in the history of Gallup. And he says, the question was, what do 7 billion people want? And 7 billion people, that's the preponderance of the world's population. We have just over 7 billion people in the world today. And you think, what? Now, 7 billion people, only 325 million people live in the United States. So a vast number of people, the majority of people live outside the United States. And so you think, what do 7 billion people want? You know, clean water or food or any of these things. The answer was actually a good job, which is okay. Significant. A good job. So the preponderance of the world's population has moved from the need for Maslow's hierarchy of needs on that first rung of food, safety, shelter, to a higher level. Now, that's not to say there's still not famine, danger, war in various countries and continents around the world. There still is. And there is a need to focus and put some of these and diminish a lot of these things that are going on and the atrocities and travesties that are going on around the world. But the majority of the world's population now say, we want a good job. We want to contribute to the world around us in ways that the world can benefit from our talents and our energies. Yes. And so that's what we're passionate about. We're passionate about helping people discover the who they are so they can apply those energies, not just for a company that they go to work for, but just in their families and their lives. And I've had people tell me as I'm working with them on various things on the business side, I've had a couple of folks say, you know, after I've taken the CBI, I think you saved my marriage. Wow. Not only are we putting people in the right seats, but we're also saving marriages.
Nice.
So it's amazing.
That might be a new business opportunity for you.
Yeah. There. Well, yeah, that's tomorrow's website.
Right. Well, I just think of companies, and so how many companies hire the wrong person. They interview well. Their references come back great. Their resume was great, but yet they get into the job and they're still not the right fit, even though you've done all your due diligence and their background checks, et cetera. So I think something like this for companies can really help companies, as you say, hire the best fit. So I just see, because I once was an employer and that has happened to me personally. So this was a value.
Well, there's actually a tremendous amount of data and information out there and research that's been done around the idea of utilizing information like this and assessments and algorithms to identify folks that actually fit rather than allowing the human subjectivity to always make the decision. I mean, truly, how do we know if we're looking at one resume and another resume if that person truly fits? It's very difficult to subjectively make that decision. And so utilizing a tool, and there's a Harvard Business Review article that actually specifically says, utilize algorithms in the initial assessment of the candidate pool, and you'll be significantly better off with your hiring process. So we've got a lot of data that already says the process that we're utilizing is the right process. And now we've got to make the paradigm shift, you know, in the workforce today and the folks doing the hiring to understand that there is a better way. There is a better way than trying to do what we've done. The historical numbers are we're 30% right. You know, we'll get it right 30% of the time at best. And so 70% of the time we're wrong. And that hurts the organization, and that also hurts the individual that's in the role. And then we change jobs and careers 7 times. Mm-hmm. And so we've got a tremendous opportunity now to utilize highly accurate assessment tools to be able to get us to a place where the right people are sitting in the right seats. And, you know, we haven't even talked about youth, but youth have a tremendous opportunity now to take assessments. Specifically, you know, we believe in the Core Values Index assessment. You take this 13, 14 years old, it sets you up for a tremendous self-awareness through your high school years to be able to utilize this newfound knowledge of how you're hardwired and knowing if you learn by talking and listening and knowing if you learn by reading and analyzing and knowing how you actually can communicate with the people around you significantly better. It's incredibly valuable for the youth of today. And if I had known, I can tell you right now, if I had known that I was a merchant builder when I was in high school, I would have never studied accounting. Now, there's nothing against accounting, but I would have never studied accounting. But there's no question. I would have gone a different route with the skill set and the strengths that I know I have today based on this information.
Well, I think even though you took accounting, you should not have necessarily taken accounting because you're the merchant builder. I think it makes you even that much more stronger in the position that you serve in, because you can say, look, I did not know, and this is what I did. But now that I know, look what I can do. So I think it just serves in an even much stronger position. So what has taking the core value assessment done for you personally, professionally? How has it changed your life?
Yeah, I do tell people it changed my life when I took it. And the key way is what I've just referenced is I had a clarity that I don't believe I've ever had in regards to where I could apply my strengths. And so professionally, it's allowed me to maximize and leverage who I am truly and experience, you know, things that I don't think I've historically experienced. And so that's been something that's super positive from the professional side. So I'm starting to see the benefits of that. On the personal side, though, this would bleed over into the personal side, on professional side also, is that my communication with others and understanding of others and why they do things is just improved significantly. So then relationship improves, and having the ability to communicate with people because we know how they like to be communicated with. That's a problem that we all face. We see the world through our own core value lens, and we want to communicate with people the way we want to be communicated with. We need to be communicating with people the way they need to be communicated with to increase our level of effectiveness and understanding. And so I would say these two components that I just referenced, my ability to actually know how I'm hardwired and know how I apply my strengths and contribute to the world around me, and my ability to build relationship and community by understanding how to better communicate, are the two most amazing things that I've ever experienced utilizing the Core Values Index Assessment.
Nice. Well, I have taken that core values index assessment, and I too am a merchant builder, and I have told other people that they need to take it. I am one of those individuals that you looked at and you could tell that I was impressed, like, wow, you just met me. And yes, you know all these different things about me. That was impressive to see. So how can someone who is listening, you know, we have our listeners out there, if they want to take this, how can they take it? Where do they go?
So actually the best place to go is erep.com.
All right.
They go to erep.com and sign in, and there's a free version of the assessment once you sign in. So you just put in your name, your email, and then a password, and it'll get you into the system. Once you're in the system, you'll see Core Values Index on the left-hand side in the menu. Click on that, it'll open up a screen, and you can take it right from there, and it's free. There's a free version within the system. So you'll have access to your results at erep.com anytime you want.
Very nice. Are there any last comments that you want to leave our listeners as we tune out?
You know, the key thing that I love to talk about is just this concept of self-awareness and understanding how you're hardwired and utilizing that to maximize your contribution to the world around you. And with a Core Values Index assessment, it tells us how we're innately hardwired. And, you know, I just encourage everybody that I know to sit down, take 7 to 9 minutes, take the assessment, and find out who you are.
I would agree with that. Thank you again for listening to KBOO FM. If you are interested in taking this test, definitely go to erep.com. Thank you, Travis, for joining us.
Thank you, Adrian, for having me.
You're welcome. So now we are going to take a musical break with R. Kelly, The Wonders, The World's Greatest. When we come back, we will be joined by Joe Bergeron, Kathleen Maloney, Claire McLeod, and Olivia Pace from the American Society for the Positive Care of Children. And we'll talk about how they advocate for our children to keep them safe. We'll be right back.
I am a mountain, I am a tall tree, oh, I am a swift wind, sweeping the country. I am a river, down in the valley, oh, I am a vision, and I can see clearly. If anybody asks you who I am, just stand up tall, look them in the face and say,
that star up in the sky, from that mountain peak up high. Hey, I made it. I'm the world's greatest. And I'm that little bit of hope. When my back's against the ropes, I can feel it. I'm the world's greatest. The world's greatest. The world's greatest. Ever. I am a giant. I am an eagle. Oh, I am a lion. Down in the jungle. I am a marching band. I am the people. Oh, I am a helping hand. I am a hero. If anybody asks you who I am, just stand up tall, look them in the face and say, I'm that star up in the sky. I'm that mountain peak up high. Hey, I made it. I'm the world's greatest. And I'm that little bit of hope. When my back's against the ropes, I can feel it. I'm the world's greatest.
In the ring of life, I'll rain love.
I will rain.
And the world will notice I king.
Oh yeah, yeah.
When it's darkness, oh, I'll shine a light.
Shine a light.
And the mirrors of success remain.
Welcome back to Bread and Roses, Feminist News and Public Affairs on KBOO Portland. We are pleased to be joined in the studio with members from the American Society for the Positive Care of Children, or SPCC, as I will refer to it. It is the American SPCC's vision and mission to build an active, caring community and empower youth advocacy through youth-inspired solutions to end abuse, positively affecting the welfare of our children, youth, and families. Through educational resources, American SPCC aims to increase awareness of child maltreatment, advocate for children's rights, promote prudent parenting and positive discipline, and offer anti-bullying strategies. With this multi-platform approach, the American SPCC intends to initiate and generate a shift in societal norms and cultural beliefs as they relate to child maltreatment. With us in studio today, we have Gerald Bergeron, who is a policy consultant in Portland. The American SPCC has been a client of his since 2014. He studied policy advocacy and social movement strategy at the University of California, Irvine, where he earned his PhD in political science in 2008. He then served as the assistant professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin, Parkside, from 2008 to 2010, before returning here to the West Coast. I'm so glad you did, Joe. Joe holds a bilingual Spanish social science credential and has also taught in high school for several years in the Los Angeles and Berkeley public schools. We also have Kathleen Maloney, an international human rights lawyer who teaches international criminal law and human trafficking at Lewis and Clark Law School, and serves as an independent consultant to the American Society for the Positive Care of Children. She advises them on children's rights and youth advocacy strategies, programs, activities, and events that will help bring the U.S. into alignment with the Convention of the Rights of the Child, or the CRC. The CRC has been ratified by every nation except the United States. So she was brought onto the American SPC in this context, and given the epidemic of child abuse in this country. We also have Claire McLeod. She is a senior at St. Mary's Academy. She is the president of Youth Ending Slavery, an entirely youth-led anti-human trafficking nonprofit located in the Portland area. Her involvement with the YES led her to become a member of the American SPCC Youth Advisory Board last year. Besides working with these two nonprofits, Claire is also actively engaged in St. Mary's Human Rights Club, 1 Billion Rising Movement, and Poverty Awareness Week. Our last guest with us tonight, and these are just some very impressive ladies, is Olivia Pace. She is a sophomore on the Dean's List at Portland State University. Congratulations for being on the Dean's List, first of all. She is majoring in political science and minoring in Black Studies. She joined the American SPCC Youth Advisory Board in May of 2015. Olivia has also done work with the Portland branch of the hashtag Black Lives Matter movement. Don't shoot, hear this really good, Don't Shoot PDX, and the Portland International Socialist Organization. Welcome and thank you to you all for coming and sharing with us this evening.
Thank you.
Yes. So let's learn more about the American Society for the Positive Care of Children. Who and what is this organization?
This is a nonprofit that was started in 2011, and it's a national nonprofit, but in the last year and a half, it has focused more on the Portland area. And it's really about ending child abuse in this country and trying to prevent child abuse, neglect, and exploitation. That's the vision, is a society where all children in this country enjoy human rights, where they're not subject to abuse, neglect, and exploitation. And the mission is carried out by our young people, mainly because it's very dedicated to giving young people a voice and empowering youth to bring forth the solutions that are inspired by the problems that they face in their communities. So that's really what we've been doing on the ground here in Portland for the last year and a half, is working with the members of our youth advisory board, holding events that concern the youth and the communities to which they belong. And I can turn it over to Joe to explain what some of those issues are that we've been working on, and our youth advisory board members here could explain more about that too.
Okay, yeah. Great.
Yeah, we had a really successful event on November 20th last year that had about 200 attendees, and it was held downtown Portland, mostly youth attending, and it was sort of American SPCC's first community event to introduce ourselves to the Portland community, and most of all, though, to provide a platform for youth-led organizations and initiatives to share the work that they are doing. And it was just a really wonderful event, and we've just been building on the momentum of that since then. Some of the issues covered at the Youth Forum last year, talked to Multnomah Youth Commission attended. They discussed transit justice and youth violence prevention. And some of their other initiatives. We had Oregon Foster Youth Connection discussing foster care standards in our community. Multnomah County was there talking about restorative justice. Youth Ending Slavery attended to discuss all of the good work that they're doing. Leadership and Entrepreneurship Public High School, Charter School attended to discuss bullying and some of the strategies they're working on. And then Momentum Alliance was our sixth. We had six participants, youth-led organizations at that event. And since then, we've just really been building on the momentum of that and really highlighting the youth voice in all of the work that we've done. Continue partnering with Youth Ending Slavery. We've worked with Resolutions Northwest to discuss child abuse and solutions in our community. And one of our major partners also is the Nest Foundation, a nonprofit in Los Angeles that raises awareness about commercial sexual exploitation of children in the United States, principally. They have a very domestic focus on sex trafficking of children issues.
Very nice. So what are the programs that make up the American SPCC? Because ultimately, I definitely want to hear from these young ladies, but yeah, if you could talk about the programs and then hear from them.
Yeah, well, one of the main things when Kathleen and I started in 2014 working with American SPCC, our major goal was to create a youth advisory board so that it was, you know, very official in the functions of this small startup nonprofit youth advocacy organization, that the youth voice was front and center and really did lead the actions that we adults were taking, and that we were truly listening to youth voice. Certainly plenty of the community events take place during the school day, and Kathleen and I and our, you know, other colleagues at American SPCC can attend those, but we want to be checking in with our youth regularly, getting their feedback, so that we are truly a youth-led type of organization, youth influenced.
Okay, so Claire and Olivia, who would like to start? Tell us about who you are and what you do for the American SPCC.
Well, I haven't been on the board for that long. I joined this May, and the main thing I've done with the board is we had an event at Madison High School where we talked about Libby Spears' documentary Playground, which focuses on commercial sexual exploitation of children. And I've just kind of been learning a lot about the different statistics. Portland is has the second highest sex trafficking rate of children in the country. And so I've been really shocked, and I've just kind of been sitting back and trying to just educate myself so I can be a leader in these issues and tie them into other issues that I work with.
Very nice. And what about you, Claire?
I got involved last fall, actually, at the youth forum that Joe was talking about. I'm the president of Youth Ending Slavery, so we were invited to speak at that forum, and that's kind of how I was introduced, as I think the wider Portland community was, to American SPCC. And after that, I applied for their youth advisory board, and I was really, I think I was moved by the fact that for the past year prior to that forum, I was working specifically with preventing human trafficking and raising awareness among young people regarding that issue. And while I feel like I'm really passionate about that issue, I think the value of the Youth Advisory Board and of American SPCC in their general and kind of broad goal of raising awareness about child abuse is that there's so many different issues that can be connected to that root and kind of that fundamental atrocity within the U.S. and across the world. And so I've been really taken aback by all the amazing people on the board who all are interested in different issues that all have roots with child abuse.
So talking about that, can you give me some statistics on child abuse in the state and the country? Mm.
Kathleen?
Well, the latest figures that are probably about 50% underreported by some estimates is that, and this was from 2012, that there were 1,640 child fatalities that year, which averages out to about 4 child fatalities per day in the U.S. And in terms of maltreatment, there are figures that indicate that there are about 1,825 children abused or neglected in the U.S. each day. And these rates are way higher than other industrialized nations. The U.S. child maltreatment death rate is 3 times higher than that of Canada, and it's about 11 times higher than Italy's, and about double the rates of France, Japan, Germany, and Britain. So that's one of the reasons that American SPCC is so involved in looking at all the issues connected to child abuse and maltreatment, is that as an industrialized nation, we have some serious problems that other countries in similar positions are not facing. And one of them is, for example, the incarceration system, whether that's institutionalized children in foster care or whether that's sending them to prison through what we call the school-to-prison pipeline in this country. For example, if we look at Black youth in the school system, they are sent, they're disciplined and sent to it's sent to prison at about 5 times the rate of white children. And then you look at Latino children, and they're about two to three times the rate, as well as American Indian children, about that same disparate rate of treatment in our schools, and then, of course, incarceration in our prisons. And that's one of the reasons that I became so passionate about working with this nonprofit, is that I have the broader context of working internationally, and the Convention on the Rights of the Child, for example, says that imprisoning children, especially youth, should be a measure of last resort and only for a very short period of time. And yet in this country, we keep children, we have about 60,000 children locked up each year in our prison system, and they face excessive use of force, they face physical restraint, they're subject to solitary confinement and isolation, which in other countries is considered cruel, inhuman, and degrading punishment. So we have a long way to go to bring the U.S. up to the standards of other comparable countries in the world.
And so, as I mentioned, it's every nation has, let's see, the CRC has been ratified by every nation except the United States. That's appalling to hear.
Well, it's the most universally ratified human rights treaty of all the human rights treaties that exist in the world. And so it really is unconscionable that the United States is now the only country that has not ratified it. It signed it about 20 years ago in 1995, but this treaty has been in force for 25 years, and we now have even Somalia and the new country of South Sudan that have ratified it. And that's not to say that the treatment of children in those countries is necessarily better, but they've at least adopted a framework, an analytical framework, and a system of reporting, holding themselves accountable to an 18-member committee that serves the Convention on the Rights of the Child, so that there can be some sort of review process and some kind of harmonization or standardization of laws in each country that will meet these human rights standards that the rest of the world has said are universal.
Yes. I just think of, with some of the line of work that I've done, and you've mentioned the school to prison pipeline, especially even targeting minority youth, et cetera, and just looking at systems of oppression, systems that maintain racist policies, that really needs to be addressed. Yeah. So then going back to the youth getting involved, what does that look like? So is it by school? Is it separate committees where it's kind of a multi-school approach? So if someone is really trying to understand, what does it look like? Help me understand that.
With American SBCC, the Youth Advisory Board is structured around gathering youth, I think, from different areas and different perspectives, especially, as I said earlier, people that are interested in different issues and that can collaborate and understand the intricacies of those separate issues and how really no issue stands alone in terms of affecting minorities, as we've talked about, or in terms of stemming from a similar problem or stemming from something upstream. And so I think with American SBCC, the way they structure their youth advisory board is really based on gathering people from different experiences and different perspectives so that they have that holistic view and that understanding of the connection between all the different issues that exist.
Okay, and so how many youth are serving on this board?
Well, yeah, currently we have 7 members, high school and college students, all in the Portland area. And we have one student moving this summer, so we'll have 6 as the school year starts.
Nice. So with these 7 and growing, then how does that filter out to getting others involved?
Well, right now, one of the main things we're planning is really building upon, Olivia had mentioned event. We had 2 events in May. We had a dialogue about solutions to child abuse on May 9th at Madison High School. And then on May 26th, we had a larger youth dialogue with elected officials to discuss child sex trafficking. And there were students from David Douglas High School and Madison High School that are piloting a curriculum that was written by the NEST Foundation, who I mentioned earlier, sex trafficking awareness organization in LA. And they're piloting this curriculum here in Portland, starting at Madison and at David Douglas. And 9th and 10th grade students from both of those schools were on stage on May 26th asking elected officials questions about this issue. Our youth advisory board participated in planning that event. And currently, we just had a meeting this week. We're planning on sort of building upon the momentum of that event. That event on May 26th included Multnomah County Commissioner Diane McKeel. She was on the stage taking questions from the high school students. We also had Chuck Laval, a police officer on the who does sex crimes for the Portland Police Bureau. Paloma Sparks, legislative director for the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries. Kathleen Taylor, representative in the Oregon House of Representatives. Her district is in Milwaukee. And also had Rod Underhill, the district attorney from Multnomah County. So we had a really wonderful panel of officials answering questions from youth. And, for example, Kathleen Taylor and Diane McKeel as well, both invited our youth advisory board as well as the youth that participated there on May 26th at Madison to come talk with them And so currently we're sort of following up and planning what those follow-up conversations will look like. The legislative session just ended, but what sort of legislative follow-up might look like. Nice. So yeah, it's very exciting.
Nice.
A lot of possibility.
I do know that Curriculum Playground, I helped to pilot that at Madison mm-hmm. High School. And just to hear from the students, especially when you are not, it was, again, it's about talking about sex trafficking. And on, in Oregon, we have a law where if you are under the age of 18, you cannot consent to having sex, yes or no. But yet when someone has been out on the streets, I don't like saying prostitute, but that's what they are viewed at, and that's what they are then booked. I think Portland is doing a better job, so I want to preface it this next thing by saying that. But typically what you'll see is if that girl is caught with a buyer, sometimes it's the girl that goes to jail. She's under the age of 18 and that buyer's let go. But yet we have a law on the books that says you cannot actually consent. Yes or no. So why, even though you did catch this person, why are you sending her to jail and you're letting the buyer, who is over 18, but therefore a pedophile, go? That makes literally no sense. And mm-hmm. I looked at them and said, it doesn't make any sense to me. So we need to get more people to help have our government implement these laws. And I think Portland is doing a better job, but you know, this is also a national problem. It's a global problem, obviously.
Right.
So if you are just tuning in, you are listening to KBOO Portland, and we're having a conversations with members from the American Society for the Positive Care of Children. So talk to me more about the Youth Ending Slavery. What is that committee and how did that get started?
Youth Ending Slavery is a federal nonprofit. We gained nonprofit status a little over a year ago, actually. And so we focus on preventing and raising awareness among youth regarding sex trafficking. Our entire board of directors is made up of youth. And then we have separate chapters around the Northwest region. We have almost nine chapters right now. So through our chapter network, we're reaching over 100 other students that are involved with Youth Ending Slavery. And then our board of directors, which is made up of 5 students, we plan awareness events and fundraising events. All of our money that we do raise in excess of covering costs of venues and whatnot, we donate to anti-trafficking organizations that work directly with victims or survivors, because that's something that we feel is very important. But it, just given our expertise, that's not really, we can't serve in that capacity, but we still want to serve in that role of helping victims and survivors. And so that's the premise of our organization, is raising awareness and among youth and encouraging them to be advocates for change.
Nice. So are the chapters at different high schools?
Yeah. So the chapters are at different high schools. We have, it varies from, we have some down in, we have Marist in Eugene, which that's one of our farther chapters. And most of them are at high schools. We do have one chapter at the University of Puget Sound, which is actually run by our founder, Allison Nason. So in that sense, we mainly focus on a high school audience, but we do try to reach out to both older and younger students as well.
Nice. So if a school or someone that is at a different school that doesn't have a chapter, how do they get that started?
If you go online to our website, we have a...
And what is the website?
YouthEndingSlavery.org. And if you search that in Google, it should come up. We have a website and we have a monthly newsletter that we send out. But if you are interested in starting a chapter or know someone that is, we are looking to expand our chapter network in this coming year. And it's a fairly straightforward application. It varies. It's trying to be standardized in these last couple of weeks, but it's hard sometimes with schools have different policies for clubs and whatnot. But it's a pretty straightforward application. And you can find that, send it in, and you can become a chapter.
Okay, I'm going to be definitely encouraging different schools, both, you know, high schools and college, to get involved. I mm-hmm. think what I see at this point in time, it's a groundswell of people that once they do learn about this issue, that they do want to get involved. And it's oftentimes hard to figure out, where can I get engaged? So I think mm-hmm. what you're doing, the fact that this has started, when did this start, actually?
It started in 2011 as Allison Nason started it, and it was the Anti-Slavery Committee initially, just in wards within St. Mary's Academy. And then last July was when we gained nonprofit status. And now we operate as a public nonprofit. So we're not just inside of St. Mary's, we're within the community and we're reaching out to all those different schools.
Nice. Well, Del has something to share for us.
This is Delphine. I just wanted to say, I'm the engineer here tonight. I just wanted to say that we had actually Youth Ending Slavery on Bread and Roses back in 2012, and Allison was one of the folks that we had on. So I'm super excited to see the chapter is still going and things are moving forward. And I had a question for Olivia, if that's okay that I ask.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'm very curious as to how you see Black Lives Matter and the Don't Shoot Portland fit within the work that you do with the American SPCC.
Yeah, for sure. So I've done a little bit of work with Don't Shoot PDX, and my main focus at PSC mostly is working with the student union, and there's a lot of overlap between those two groups. Right now the student union is working mostly on disarming the CPSO. CPSO at Portland State was armed on July 1st, so now a select amount of police officers now carry weapons and have been trained by the Portland Police, and we are very uncomfortable with that, especially students of color and transgender students. And that obviously ties into the Black Lives Matter movement and the idea that militarizing police is dangerous for people of color. And I think the way that ties in is it works directly with the school-to-prison pipeline. The reason that we have this system that's set up where children of color are essentially set up from where they live and the schools that they go to lead a life where they're either going to be in prison or dead is directly relates to the disparities that children in this country face. And so I think that it's pretty obvious the connection between those two issues. And I'm really happy that I get to work here because I feel like it really broadens the work that I do in terms of not just focusing on adults and kind of what we see, like adults and teenagers who are targeted by the police, but knowing that young children, I've seen young children targeted by police when I've been out protesting, like, and you would think that they would be exempt from that kind of treatment, but they're not. And so it really connects pretty easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much. It really does.
No problem.
Yeah, I mean, the incidents with the young lady by the pool who was harassed physically.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank
14.
You.
14, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. So anything else you would like to add?
Well, this is Kathleen again, just to add to what Olivia just said about the way that we treat children in the prison system and even in the institutionalization, different institutions in our country. One of the things I'd like to mention is that the Convention on the Rights of the Child, this is again kind of a universal standard that the rest of the world has adopted, prohibits mixing youth or young people under the age of 18 and adults in the prison system, and that happens routinely in this country. And it also prohibits sentencing youth as adults for crimes that they've committed when they're under 18. And so that's another disparity that hits different races and classes really hard. So I think there's a really important connection with the international human rights norms and what's happening in our country, even if you look just at the issues that Olivia's speaking about.
Yes, yes. No, I'm just, did you have something to say?
Oh yeah, just going off of that, it's just interesting. When you look at the school-to-prison pipeline, the reason that CRC is so important is you can literally have a student get in a fight at school, and because we don't have CRC, if they're 16 or 17 years old, they can be targeted and charged while they're in school for making that kind of mistake. And so it just shows that the way that we treat children in this country, especially children of color, just sets them up for failure from the beginning, even when they're in a safe place like their own school, like their high school.
Yes, and it shows that all these different systems work together, that it's just not one system that we have to tackle. It's not just child abuse. It's the multiple systems that have to be targeted by so many groups. So I'm so excited to hear that you're involved with so many other organizations. You have the American SPCC, but Youth Ending Slavery, Black Lives Matter, Don't Shoot PDX, so many different venues that the intersectionalities of these is so critical to us making an impact. So if someone wants to get involved with the American SPCC, what do they do? Where do they go?
Well, we have our website is americanspcc.org. We're also, partnering. Coming up on November 19th, we're going to have a follow-up youth forum, building up on that momentum from May, covering the topics of commercial sexual exploitation of children, foster care standards, and youth homelessness. It's going to be very local, focused on Portland issues. We're actually planning the flyer as we speak in our meeting this week with the Youth Advisory Board, and so we'll have more promotion by the end of the month.
You can also apply through our website to be on the Youth Advisory Board, as well as to be a youth ambassador. That's part of how we build our volunteer corps, is go online, and if you want to get more involved, there are different ways that you can click on different links and get involved with our organization.
Now, what if there's an adult that wants to get involved? Is that a possibility?
Yes, also. Individual ambassador could be an adult or a student.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Very nice. Well, we have learned a tremendous amount of information from you all tonight. Again, I'm just so thankful that we have some young lives in here joining us and giving voice. Very, very critical to the fight, I believe, so that they see that it's not just adults out there, but you all, I think even when they see you, it's more impactful. So thank you. Thank you for getting involved and making a difference. Any closing comments to anyone?
I'll just say thank you, Adrian.
You're
welcome. Appreciate the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us, and it's such a privilege working with the youth.
Thank you.
Thank you, Claire. Thank you, Olivia.
I have one more thing. If you're interested in demilitarizing police, you can come to PSU downstairs in Smith Memorial Student Union on Monday at 6 and hang out with the student union and talk about all that kind of cool stuff and get involved.
Nice. Well, thank you for joining us on KBOO tonight. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. If you want to listen again or share this interview with others, you can access our podcast and share your feedback or show ideas on our website, kboo.fm/breadandroses. Again, remember us on social media, Facebook, as well as Twitter. Next week, July 24th, Leanne Krantz will be your next host, and she will be interviewing the author, Portland author, Liz Prado. And she will talk about her new book, Babies on Fire, and discuss sisterhood in the writing and publishing world.
Thank you so much, Adrian, for this wonderful show. Have a great week, everyone, and stay tuned for Hard Knock Radio news and views from a hip-hop perspective. And we're going to leave you with the Destiny's Child. This is Survivor.